Okay, we're going to start on the two dots in the middle of Nun Amud Bet. Gemara is quoting the Mishnah, which says, "Lo ish chazaka b'dichsei ishto." The Mishnah says that a husband cannot generate a chazaka in the possessions of his wife, which would seem to be for obvious reasons, which is that his entitlement to use the land or access to the land has to do with their marriage, not due to the fact that he actually transacted with his wife. But now we have a statement from Rav, and the statement of Rav we have to clarify. Amar Rav. Rav says, Eshit ish tzricha limchot. A woman has to be mocha. Now, if a woman has to be mocha, then it indicates that there's an ability to establish a chazaka. It's an ability to establish a chazaka that goes against the Mishnah. So Gemara says, Biman, who are we talking about? Who is her interaction with that we're discussing here that says that she has to be mocha? So Gemara says, Ilem abacher, if we're talking about a third party, means someone else is going to transact with her. There is no ability to establish a chazaka on the possessions or the land of a woman, a married woman. Why is that? Because the underlying assumption, or she always has an excuse. We always say that the chazaka works is because you could have been mocha or moche, you could have objected, and you didn't object. Your lack of objection is an indication that you acquiesce to the ownership of the other party. But over here, the woman can make a claim, which is, I was relying on my husband to do to be moche here, to object in this instance. The reason I didn't object was because I thought my husband was going to object. So the lack of objection here by the woman is not an indication of her either acquiescing or giving up ownership of the property. So we never say that you can establish a chazaka on the possessions of a woman and you'll have to keep your shtar. Basically, you have to have indications that you were sold the property. So if that's the case, the only person that the rabbi could be speaking about is the husband himself. Well, if we're talking about the husband, then you have a direct stira to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that a husband cannot establish a chazaka b'nichsei ishto, and Rav comes along and says, oh, the wife has to be mocha, she has to object in order to prevent her husband from creating a chazaka. So that goes right against the Mishnah. So we have two solutions, one solution by Rava, one solution by Rav Yosef. Amar Rava, Rava says, l'olam b'baal, you're right, we're talking about the husband here, but kagon shachafar bar barot, shechimu me'arot, that he did what would otherwise be described as damage to the property. That true, when it comes to nichsei malug, when it comes to property that a wife brings in her ksuva to the marriage, which returned to her after in the dissolution of the marriage, whether it's through death of the husband or divorce, that property will revert back to the woman. In the interim, the husband has rights to the peirot, to the usage or the utility of that property. What he does have is to do things that are productive with the property. What he does not have a right to do is destroy the property or do things that detract from the value of the property. Now, obviously, we're talking about a property that's not made to have cisterns and pits dug into it. But this is not the proper usage of the land. And his doing this is a violation, right, of, I guess, the woman's rights. And he would only be able to do this if he owned the property. So the fact that the woman did not object is an indication that he must have bought the property from his wife. Now he owns it, and that's why he's doing such damage. Where it says, "Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rabbi Baravua," was something we saw back on Daf Chof Gimel, which is that ein chazaka l'nizokin. When it comes to doing damage, when you're mazik a person, there is no establishment of a chazaka through being a mazik. That doesn't establish a chazaka. So just because he's mazik over here, doesn't entitle him to a chazaka on the property. So Gemara says two solutions to this problem of ein chazaka l'nizakin. One is, ema ein din chazaka l'nizakin. There's no din of chazaka l'nizakin, which means you don't have to wait 3 years. When you want to establish a chazaka in general, you have to wait 3 years. Why do you have to wait 3 years? Because we say over that 3 year period, right, that establishes a person who uses or utilizes a property without objection over the 3 years is a clear indication of their ownership. But here, by nizakin, you don't have to wait 3 years. If someone uses your property in such a manner that he causes damage to the property, a person would object right away. I mean, forgetting about ownership, not ownership. In other instances, you can't excuse. You weren't machzik and machzainche. You didn't take the nuum away that people take it. I thought you were going to leave. Someone else came. All these other excuses don't apply when it's nezik. When a person is doing damage to your property, then you object right away. If you don't object, That's a clear indication that you don't own it. So that's one answer. That answer will indicate that damage establishes a chazakah immediately. You don't need 3 years. And that's what we're talking about here. The statement of Rav, which says that the woman must object to her husband's exertion of ownership over the property, is an instance where he goes ahead and is damaging the property. If she doesn't object, that's an indication that he must have bought the property from her, and her lack of objection is an acquiescence to that fact.
Where is that underlying consideration in terms of an issue that she doesn't object to something her husband does because she doesn't want to antagonize him?
Right, so here the Gemara seems to assume, although there will be an alternative answer, which is that a woman would object in those instances, and
it's enough of a provocation.
Right, that she's here, it's going to be to a major detriment to her, then she'll say something, listen, you can't do this to my property over here, I have to object to that. And also the objection here is not, it's simply just an exertion of ownership. It's not necessarily an objection to its action, but saying that despite the fact that you've acted in this manner, it still is my property, right? The other possibility is, which we saw in the Gemara of Gimel, is that they qualified the statement of Rav Nachman, which is Lavi Tamar La, Rav Mari Mar Bakutra, has to do with smoke, Rav Zvira Mar Beita Kise, a bathroom. So that's they're Beita Kise, which is an above ground, an outhouse, above ground Beita Kise, or smoke. Tosas qualifies as to be smoke from a Kivshan, which is a heavy duty smoke. In these areas, there you cannot establish a chazakah. Despite the fact that there's a lack of objection over there, we say that, nevertheless, the person does not have to give in these instances because these are such difficult smells and damage to stand up to that we say that even in this case, even if he didn't object, there's still no chazakah established. If you remember back in Chav Gimel, the Rabbeinu Tam wanted to go as far as to say that even if you make a kinyan, even if someone says, listen, I want to put a outhouse right on the border, and you know that the smell is going to waft over, and you make a kinyan based on that, Rabbeinu Tam says you can go back on the kinyan. Why? Because he could say, I thought I could take the... But then in the end, I can't take the smell. The Tosus disagrees over there with Rabbeinu Tam's position, but you see how far this goes, which is that these are things that are so damaging and so unbearable, that's why we don't say that they establish a chazakah, because people think they might, or maybe think they can, but in the end they can't deal with these. So that's the statement of Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman's statement about not establishing chazakah ben nizakin is limited to these extreme forms of nezek. But in general, it would be a chazakah that you could establish. And over here, the husband would establish a chazakah by digging these cisterns into the property. Joseph Amar, so this is the second answer, the same possibility of how to explain or reconcile Rav with our Mishnah. So Rav's reconciliation is that we're talking about the Baal. Enoch and Am, there's a steer with the Mishnah, but the cases are different. Case where a Baal cannot establish chazakah is if he uses it the normal way. If he uses it in a way that is to the detriment of the property or something that should not be the normal usage of the property, the woman must object, otherwise it's an indication of his ownership over the property. Rav Yosef says no. Dolam b'acher. Rav Yosef says no, that Rav's statement that Eshet Ish Tricha Limchot is talking about a third party that comes to establish ownership over the property. Well, what's the case here? Kagon she'achla miksat chazaka b'chayei abal u'shalosh lachar mitat abal. That she already began, this individual purchased it from the husband, and it's clear, what right do you have to purchase from the husband? The husband only owns the peirot. So you can purchase the utility plus the option, right? The option that if the woman predeceases the husband, then you also will get rights to the property. But if the husband dies first, right, he predeceases his wife, then he will lose the property. So that's exactly what he bought it for, and he agrees to that. Then, after the husband passes away, he claims that he went ahead and purchased it from the woman. And then he has 3 years while the wife, after the post the husband's death, he has now been on the property for 3 years at that point in time. So now he establishes a chazakah. Why? Migo di bayamar le la, because at that point in time he can say to her, meaning that there's a migo, because he can say di bayamar anaz vita minach, right? Because he could have just said, I bought it directly from you. He could say, I bought it directly from the woman. Ki amar le nami at zvinta le vizavna ni ale meiman. So he can say, listen, I bought it directly from you, and in that case he would believe. Why? He has 3 years of chazakah, plus he said, I bought it from you. So there now he's already established a chazakah, he has a clear taina, and it'll be all over. So now when he goes in and says, listen, I bought it from him, and he bought it from you. The husband bought it from his wife, and I bought it from the husband, and that's why I have a right to stay on here. So in that case he's believed with a migo. because he could have just made a straight claim that I bought it directly from the woman.
And has he established
that they...
Right,
it's a good question. So the bigger problem, there's even a bigger problem, which the Rashi won't even address, which is that we just saw by Aris in the Mishnah. If you start on a property as an Aris,
right,
you can't change... You can't change from being a... Right. Once you've established your right to be there for payroll, you can't just change to become a buyer. So Rashbam says that there's something, there's an interesting point here, which I think might answer your first question as well, which is that an Aris, when he goes down to a property, there's no time limit on his establishment. Meaning that your right to work as an Aris there is not time-bound in any way. You have your sharecropper, and there's no natural end to your relationship. Since there's no natural entity relationship, we always assume that he is an aris. That's not true by a husband and a wife. A husband and a wife, the establishment of the relationship of peirot has an ending to it. So therefore, when you go and purchase the peirot from the husband, right, you know there is an end to that, which is when the husband passes away or the wife passes away, that relationship will end. Since there is a natural end after that, and you were still there on the property afterwards, you have now a right to a new claim, that there must be something changed after that point in time. Because if the husband died and you only had rights to the peirot, what were you doing there for the 3 years afterwards? So it must be now that there's a totally new case that's been opened at this point in time. And that's why he can establish this claim because of the migo. The migo says that I could say that right after the husband passed away, I purchased it from you because I don't want to lose my right to this property. Why can he make such a claim? Because there's been a change in the status of the property. Once he can make that claim, he now can also make, the migo allows him to make an additional claim, which is, that's not his real claim could have been that I just bought it from you. Now, when that allows us to believe him when he says, I bought it from you, I bought it from your husband who had bought it from you. And that's the migo that allows him. So he doesn't have to establish the previous ownership of the other individual because that's not the migo. Right, that's not his, it is his taina, but that's what makes his taina believable. His taina is believable because he had even a better taina, which is he could say that that I bought it directly from you. So that's how he's able to establish a chazak over here. Now it's not like the ben and the father. Remember before we said the ben and the father, he does part with the father, part with the son. That establishes a chazakah. Because over there, he had the ability to establish a chazakah both with the father and with the son. So if he combines them. But that's not true, right, with the husband and the wife. He has to have 3 years after the death of the husband because otherwise, when it's during the life of the wife, he has no amigo and he has no ability to establish a chazakah. So it has to be 3 years afterwards. So that's what Rabbi Yosef says the case of Rav is. Rav's case is limited to this unique case. The Mishnah is talking about a normal case. When you, right, a third party wants to establish a chazakah with a wife, then you can't do that. That's Rav's statement. Ein, right, machzikim nichse eshedish. So when Rav comes along and says, eshedish tricha limchot, that's this unique case where it was after the death of the husband and then he's there for 3 years. Even though he established the relationship before, we allow him to stay afterwards.
Kind of interesting
because it was established, the relationship started while she was still married. The Havamino, and that's what the rabbi's coming to address, is the Havamino would be that you're not allowed to change your status. Since you started your relationship when she was an Eshedish, maybe you can't change your status and establish a chazaka afterwards. And that's what Rav comes along to say, no, that's not true. With the death of the husband, the whole relationship changes. And that's Rav's establishment. The Eshedish part is important to indicate that even though it started beforehand, nevertheless, you can change the status. So Mara now has this very interesting line. Gufa. Amrav ein machzik minichsei eshedish. Right? So we just said before, Rav says you're not allowed to take possession of the property of eshedish. V'dainei de gola. The dayanim de gola, which the Gemara says, right, in Sanhedrin, is Shmuel and Karno. So then it goes to say, machzikin. You do have an ability to establish a chazaka with the property of a woman. Amrav alocha k'dainei gola. It's an amazing statement. Rav says, the alocha is like the dayanim of the gola. Rav just is passing against himself. Right here, Rav said before, ein machzikim nechzei eshedish. The dayanim go say you can. And then Rav says, the alocha is like dayanim gola, that you can't establish it. So when I say, I'm going to say, Rav Kanal, Rav Has, the Rav, Hadar Bey Mar Mishmate, he says, wait a minute, Rav, you know, he's coming and saying, what are you doing? Didn't you paskin that ein machzikim benichse shadish? Also now you're coming and paskin ain't like dain egola? What's up? Did you change your mind? Did you say that you reversed your position on this? So Amr Lahu, he says, back to the Mistabra Amri Kid Rabbi Yosef. Right, it makes sense. When they made their statement, I limit their statement to Rav Yosef. Now, what's Rav Yosef? Rav Yosef came before. Now, first of all, Rav could never have said this, because Rav Yosef lived many generations after Rav. They never saw each other. So Rav, what the Gemara is using Rav Yosef as an answer for Rav, not that Rav actually said, I'm like Rav Yosef, but Rav, in longhand, said exactly what Rav Yosef said. And what is that? Rav is basically saying, I think the halacha is like the Dayane Gola when it comes to the situation that Rav Yosef was speaking about. What's the situation that Rabbi Yosef is speaking about? The case where they establish a relationship before the husband died. The husband dies and he stays on the property for 3 years afterwards. In that case, you can establish a chazakah, and even Rav agreed to that. Remember, that's Rav's statement before when Rabbi Yosef explained, when Rav said, Eshedish Trichalim Chot. So that's it. When Rav said that the Dayane Gola, the halacha is like the Dayane Gola, it's in that unique case of Rav Yosef. Just like he himself said before, when does a woman have to do be mocha? He has to be mocha in a case where, like Rav Yosef. And that's what he's saying. Even though the Dayane Gola addressed a much bigger case, Dayane Gola disagreed with Rav, even not in the case of Rav Yosef. But nevertheless, Rav says, the loch is like Dayane Gola, like the case of Rav Yosef. All right, now, the Mishnah continues. If you remember, the Mishnah says, Lishab nichse bala. A woman cannot establish a chazakah on the possession of her husband, again, for the same reason that it doesn't work the other way, which is they have a relationship, and the relationship which is allows her the rights to the property. Pshita, Gemara says, of course she can't, she's married. Gemara says, no, kevin de'id la'mizune, mizune hu de'kachla. Why is it pshita? Because why is she eating fruits, or why is she eating from this property, or why is she utilizing this property? Because the husband is chayav in her mizonot. And being chayav in mizonot is what's entitling her to the usage over here. So that's not establishing ownership. It's the husband's obligation towards his wife, which she's discharging this way. Where it says, Lotzricha di yichuda ara achrita de mizono. We know that he has now established another property. There's a specific property which was designated in the ksuba or designated afterwards to take her mizonot. So this is an alternative property. This is an additional property that she's eating off of besides the property that was given to her as a right to have her mizonot or to discharge the husband's obligation of mizonot. So why is it that she can't establish a chazakah? Why does the Mishnah say she can't establish a chazakah? The answer is because a husband's not makpid. If a husband's not makpid, if she eats a little more, he's obligated mizonot, and that's what that karka's for. Yeah, the fact that his wife took some fruits from another property, eats from another property, he's not makpid about it, it's his wife. So therefore, since he's not makpid, right, his lack of objection is not an establishment of chazakah. Right, we only say that a chazakah is established when you should have objected. Here he didn't feel like he needed to object because it's his wife. And if he doesn't object, therefore, the establishment of chazakah is impossible. So now the Gemara moves on to something else, which says that our mission says you cannot establish a chazakah. Haraya yesh. But that would indicate that if she does have a shtar, meaning that it would work. I mean, if the woman has a shtar mechira from her husband, that would work. Fine, a chazakah doesn't work because you can't establish. But a chazakah is in place of a shtar. But if she does have the shtar would work. So Gemara says, Lema le gluye zuzahu debai. So the Gemara says, why is that true? Maybe the husband's worried. This is an interesting. He thinks the woman is spiriting away the money. She's taking some of his money and pocketing some of his money. She's hiding it away, putting it in a Swiss bank account, taking his money and hiding it away from her husband. So now he wants to get the money back. So how does he do that? He wants to establish the fact that his wife has this independent money. So how does he do this? He says, all right, you know what? I'm going to sell you the property. So now the wife's got to come up with the cash to pay for the property. So when she comes up with the cash, he's trying to find, and that's what he gets. He finds out about the cash that's there. It's exactly what he's trying to establish. Where it says, Shema Midna, from this you could prove, a mocher sadad lishto kanta. That a husband that sells a property to his wife is, it's sold. Velo amrinan the glu zuzehu debai. So from there we can establish what? That we do not say that. We don't say that the husband's trying to reveal hidden money of his wife. And that this would work. Because our Mishnah says that the wife cannot establish a chazakah on the property, but she can purchase the property. If she can purchase the property, that means that we believe that a woman may purchase a property, and we don't say that the only reason the husband was selling her the property was in order to find this other money. And we're going to see in a second that's a machlokas. We'll see that in a second. Mar says, lo. Eima haraya yesh bishtar matono. No, when we say in our Mishnah that she can buy it, it doesn't mean that she can't establish a chazakah. But she can't get the property through a gift. Why? By a gift, you don't have this issue of the gluye zuze. because there's no payment. A gift is simply giving the property without any money in return. So if there's no money in return, it's clear the husband's not trying to find out about hidden money. He's trying to truly give a gift to his wife. Now we're going to have it. Amar Rav Nachman Rav Huna. Nachman says, Rav Huna, lo haba mar gaban b'urta b'tchuma. You weren't with us in the tchum, right, when we were learning the Beis Medrash. So Rashi points out that they used to have the Bata Midrash at the end of the Tchum so they could go there on Shabbos. So you weren't in the Tchum, you didn't come join us in the Beis Medrash. Darmina Mili Ma'al Yoso. We said this great Memra and you weren't there. So Amalei, my Mili Ma'al Yoso, Amrita, what was it that you said that was so great? So he says this, Amocher Sadeli Shto Kanta, Lo Amrina Glu Yezuzo Hu Dabai. Exactly this principle that the Gemara was talking about before, that if a husband sells property to his wife, the sale goes through, and we don't say that he's trying to find out or investigate his wife about these hidden bank accounts. Samalei Pshita, he says, of course it works. Why? Dal zuze mehocho. All right, take away the money over here. V'tiknei b'shtara. He says, what about the fact that there's a shtar? Fine. If you say that the whole purpose of the money or establishing that she has money here is what he's after, then okay, fine. So we say, no, wait, the money doesn't work as a kinyan. But he still has a shtar that can work as a kinyan. She has a shtar. I mean, shtar works independent of the kesef. I mean, there are three ways to be konek: kesef, shtar, and chazakah. So fine, the kesef doesn't work because he's trying to reveal the kesef, but she still has a shtar. True, if he wants to get the money.
What does the shtar say?
Star establishes the mechira. No, establishes the mechira, and the way the Rashbam and others express it, he didn't have to do that. He could have said to, look, I'm going to sell you the property and not have to write a shtar. Right? The fact that he also wrote a shtar is indicative of what, that the shtar establishes ownership.
How can you sell his property? And you're practically speaking, how can a husband sell his wife's property without a shtar? How has she ever been able to prove ownership of it?
Edim to the fact that it was done through kesef. All right, so now, He says, because I can prove that to you. Why? Because we have Amilotznan, we have a Mishnah. So if there are multiple ways to do a kinyan, shtar is one of them, and shtar should work independent of the kesef. So Amalei v'lav yitmar lo. Don't we have a statement on that? Amar Shmuel lo shanu eluv shtar matana. Al v'shtar mecha lo kana shitein lo damel. That's not true. Shmuel says that shtar matono is the only way it works. By a husband and a wife, you can only establish, you can only have a transaction that works by shtar matono. Av shtar mecha lo kono, achitin lo damel. Right, that until the money is paid, right, then there is no kinyan by a shtar. V'la motiv Rav Hamnuna. Right, so doesn't Rav Huna challenge, this is Rav Huna saying back to Rav Nachman, who brings Shmuel's question over here. Rav Huna says back to him, wait a minute, didn't Rav Huna challenge Shmuel's statement and say, B'shtar keitzad, what is a shtar? Katav lo ni'ar lo cheres, afo pi she'en bo shaveh pruta, sadai mechur lecha, sadai kenuya lecha, harizu mechura v'tuna. So there you go, you see that a shtar works without kesef. You don't have to have kesef in order to have a shtar to establish, right, ownership over here. So why? If you can have a shtar that's worth less than the money, right, that it's written, it's not worth a pruta. So that's clearly not what's making the kinyan over here. It's the shtar itself establishes a kinyan. So Rav Nachman says back to Rav Huna, V'lav hu motiv lahu mefarikla. Rav Huna asked that question, but he also answered it. Rav Amnuna asked the question. I'm sorry, Rav Huna asking the guys a question, right? So Rav Hanachman says back to Rav Huna, Rav Amnuna, who asked the question, also answered it. And what is that? There, it's a case where he wants to sell it. He's selling the property. It's a bad property, and he wants to get rid of it. And he wants to get rid of it. He will sell. He wants anything to establish a chazakah. He wants the deal to go through and not be reversible at all. Because as soon as it's gone, he says, I'm done with the deal. So that's worst case. In the case, then we say a shtar establishes ownership. You can have a shtar be a kinyan. Otherwise, Shmuel says a shtar by itself is not a good kinyan. You need also to have kesef. You have to have kesef with the shtar. The shtar only works together with kesef, does not work independently, unless it's a shtar matana. Shtar matana, shtar will work by itself without the kesef. Now is the basic machlokas here, which is that Rav Huna believes that, Rav Nachman said it as well, but Rav Huna clearly states it, that when a person sells, a husband sells property to his wife, that we do not say that it's legulia zuze, and the property and the transaction goes through. On the other hand, Shmuel disagrees and says that the money is what establishes the transaction. And therefore, if it's legulia, right, the money, then there is no transaction anymore. And therefore, Shmuel believes that there is, right, a problem. And the Gemara now leaves that, even though Rav Nachman was able to answer all these issues, we still, the Gemara leaves it, that we have a machlokas here between Shmuel and Rav Nachman Rav Huna about whether we say the Gluli Zuze or not say the Gluli Zuze over here. Tosus points out, we've said this many times, it's us in, when we were doing Gittin and Kedushin. Tosus asks, what the Marin Gittin says, that Rav Lazar says Ede Misira only worked by Gittin. Right? Why then do we say over here that it works by Kedushin, it's working by, here we're establishing that it works in all these different places. And why is Ede Misira? So Tosus distinguishes here, like he does in the Gemara in Gittin, they are different types of shtarot. There's a shtar raya, and there's a shtar that is a kinyan. So when we say that the Edim have to be katuvin, and that doesn't Ede Misira relevant, is when the shtar is just a raya. The shtar is a raya, then the Ede Misira have nothing to do with the shtar. Then you need proper, he agrees to Rav Meir in that case, that you have to have a signed Edim on it. So when the Kedushin, right, when the Kedushin, cases, or the case of Gittin, it's the shtar itself that he's trying to establish Kedushin through the shtar. He's establishing Kedushin, Git is divorcing her through the get. So anything like a get, which functions, the shtar functions as the actual chazakah, then you can have Ede Misira. Whereas when it's established, when the shtar is working as a ra'ayo, separate shtar, then you don't, Ede Misira not relevant in that case. And that's why when we say that Rabbi Lazar's statement of Ede Misira is unique to Gittin, it means things that are like Gittin, not that it's unique to that case. Alright, now, the Gemara says, Rav Ashi Amar b'matono b'keish lidna lo v'lo makata lo v'lashom mecher k'dei lafot kocho. So now Rav Ashi is coming to answer up the brisa that Shmuel on Shmuel, meaning that Shmuel has a statement that shtar matono is the only shtar that works without kesef. When it comes to mecher, you need a shtar and kesef. So Rav Amnuna asked from the brisa, right, which says that Kataval Niyaro Cheres Abinshabe Pruta, that's a good shtar. It sounds like it's a shtar mechira over there, not just a shtar matono. So Rav Nuna answered that the case is mipnei rata. Rav Ashi says, no, I can answer that this way. That truthfully, it's a case of matono. The case is a matono. Ah, why does it say mecher in it? He gave it as a gift, but he writes in the shtar that's a mecher. Why? To give more tokef to the matono. Why does the shtar mecher give more tokef to a matono? What's the difference between a mecher and a matana? The difference between mecher and matana is achrayut, which is recourse. By matana, there is no achrayut, because that's the whole point of matana. Matana is given as a gift, but he doesn't have achrayut, he doesn't have any recourse on it. So why does he write a shtar mecher for a matana? In order that the person we gave the matana to could have recourse, that he has achrayut over here. So that's what, that brisa is not a steer to Shmuel, because it's a case of matana also. And Shmuel would agree that a shtar works. Why does it say mecher? Mecher is because he wrote Mecher even though it was a Matana. Now it happens to be here a Machlokas between the Rashbam and Tosos. The Rashbam says that he wrote in the Shtar two things. He wrote both that it was Netuna and Mechura. That it was given and sold to you. Why would he want it to be given and sold? Because there are two dinim that you have to deal with here. One is din of the bar mitzvah. What's din of the bar mitzvah? The bar mitzvah goes, when you sell a property, you have to offer it to your neighbors first. So if this is a sale, then he'd have to offer it up to his neighbors. So in order to prevent that problem, what does he want it to be? He wants it to be a matana. So he writes netuna, that it's a matana. Then he says, oh, but if it's netuna, then you don't have achrayut. So he writes mechura. So he writes, sadai, that's what he writes in the Kaddish, sadai mechura, vin osadai netuna lecha. In the project. So he goes that you have the best of both worlds. You have the best of both worlds. You get it as matana, so there's no dina de remetzra, so nobody else can come and take it away, or buy it, exercise their right of first refusal. And it's bechura lach, so you have achrayut, you have recourse against me. That's what the Rashbam. Tosafot says, I don't understand. First of all, that's not true. He says, first of all, if something's given with achrayut, a matana with achrayut turns into mecher for dina de bar mitzvah. You give a matana with achrayut, that's the equivalent of mecher, and dina de bar mitzvah applies. So first of all, what are you talking about? Dina de bar mitzvah does apply in this case, so saying netuna doesn't help you. Why would that be true? Because a matana with achrayut is like a sale, basically. And since it's like a sale, it already becomes a dina de bar mitzvah. So because he has recourse to you, if it's taken away, so that makes it already look like close enough to a mecher that you have to. If it was a real matana, you wouldn't take achrayut. So that's it.
He wants to give the matana with
Let him give cash. He could give him cash. So now, Tzatzos gives two answers. One answer is that he actually wrote him two contracts, two separate contracts. One contract of Madonna and one contract of Mechira in order to do this. To answer the same way that the Rashbam does, but he has two separate contracts that he can pull out separately. So since he can pull out the contract separately, then he's not bound, meaning that he has the ability to say, if someone comes to make a claim and he needs Achrayut, he pulls out the Mechira one. If he needs Dinah de Bar Mitzvah, he pulls out the Matana. It's not in one contract, so therefore he's able to divide between the dinim. So that's one solution of Tosfos, right? The other possibilities that he just wrote Mechura over here, which is established, not Matana. That he doesn't agree with the Rashbam, that's what the Reis says. Alright, those are two possibilities, but he disagrees with the Rashbam that he put it in one shot. And then one of the main claims is, why do you have to write Sadai twice? Sadai Mechura Lach, Sadai Netuna Lach, because it doesn't make sense that you would write it twice. You write Sadai, Netuna, Mechura Lach. That's why he said it doesn't make sense what the Rashbam is saying. Alright, now, Meitave, Love Mina Evid, Vishichuro, Mina Isha Vigirsha. He borrowed money from his slave and then freed him. Right, borrowed money from his wife and then divorces her. Ein lahem alav klal. They have nothing against him, meaning that they have no rights to come and claim their loan. The loan is basically dismissed with the freeing or the divorce over here. So Gemara wants to know, why is that the case? Why is all of a sudden that does he lose all rights? Why do they lose their rights? My time, huh? La mishum tamrina and the glu zuze dubai. The reason he borrowed the money from us is not because he really wanted to borrow from them. He said they were stashing away cash. So before he freed the slave or before he divorced his wife, he wanted to get his cash back. So how did he get his cash back? He said, basically, listen, I want to borrow some money from you. He said, sure, we'll lend you some money. They come out, and all of a sudden they pull the cash out. And then when he frees them. So now what do you see? We see that we are choshesh for the problem of Gluye Zuze. If we're choshesh for the Gluye Zuze, why doesn't Rav Nachman and Rav Huna before, why don't they have this problem? So the Gemara says, Shani Hotam, Dron Deichel, Deshav Yenashe, Eved Lovel, Ishmalve. So we have a principle that a person never wants to be a Loveh. Why does a person never want to be a loveh? Because we learned this before in Kiddushin and other places, that a loveh is an eved to the malveh. Right? You basically make yourself into a slave to, or a servant to the malveh. So nobody wants to put themselves into that position. So since nobody wants to put themselves in a position, we will toin on his behalf to find any excuse to say that you're not a loveh. So when it comes to Loveh, then you have that excuse. Then we say that it's Gluye Zuze who debay. But when it comes to Mecher, when it comes to a sale, over there, there's no reason to say, or to upend the sale, or to say, why? When he does a sale, he's not a Loveh. He's not putting himself into a position of being an Evet. So in that case, we're going to say, we don't say, or we don't tine on his behalf, that it's the Gluye Zuze, that he's coming to establish the Zuze. And that'll be the difference, right, between them, that Rav Nachman and Rav Huna, when they say, that the Gluye Zuze does not apply, those are cases of Mecher. When we say that Gluye Zuze does apply, that's a case where it's Lovet, when he's putting himself in the position of a borrower.
So why is it in the Hemelapun?
Because he really didn't borrow the money. He wasn't intending to borrow the money. He was trying to get his own money back. That's his claim. It's my own money. I'm trying to get my money back. Why he borrowed? Because he really wasn't borrowing. He was trying to get his own money back. But if we establish clearly that he borrowed the money,
it's a great idea to just borrow money from him. He's planning to divorce his wife for his
right.
Borrow money from her, and then she'll have no claims on
him. Right. So then you have to be clear. You have to make it clear that there's a shtar, or they have to write in that we're not borrowing to free up the money. You know, like, there are ways to establish that there is no chazak over here. Right. So shalach Rav Huna bar Abin Amuchas Adel Ishto Kanta. Person sells a field to his wife. It works. Ubal. Ochel peirot. But the Baal can still eat the peirot. He can still eat the fruits of that property. Why? Because when he sells the property to his wife, it's no worse than nechsei melug of hers. So it's like any property. That if she got property, if she was yoresh property during the time that they're married, that's nechsei melug. What happens to it? She owns the core, the goof of the property, and the husband is entitled to peirot. So do over here. When the husband sells property to his wife, what happens? He sells property to his wife. He's now giving her the gufa karka, but he still has the rights to the payroll, to the utility of the property. So, I mean, of course, over here, right? You see, number one, that you are able to sell to your wife. We don't say the glule zuze. It's not like Shmuel, but like Rav Nachman Rav Huna before. And number two is that he's still entitled to the payroll. Biram. So this is a machokas agirsa here. This is the girsa of Rashi, the Rashbam, which is Biram. Rabbi Ava, Rabbi Bo, machok deledor, am Rabbi Matana, bikesh lit nola. Really, he wanted to give it to her as a gift, by a gift, he's not entitled to pay rote. And why did he write as a mecher? In order to give her a tokef. I mean, that because as a mecher, she has achrayut. So now, there's the way the girsa of the Rashbam writes is that Rav Avin says, Shalach Rav Huna Bar Avin. Rav Huna Bar Avin sends, right, so he sends this to the Beis Medrash, that this is what I say. I say that when a husband sells to his wife, right, then the transaction goes through, but he still gets rights. Next thing, look, he gets rights to the payroll. But everybody else disagrees with me. Rabbi Ava, Rabbi Vo, B'chol Be'ador, they disagree with me, and it's a matana. And they don't get, he doesn't get payroll because it's a matana. And why did he write mecher? In order to give her more power when they come to collect, you know, if someone comes to take the property away from her. So the Tosos, the Rabbeinu Tam says, wait a minute. Why would Rabbi Shmuel Bar Avin send something, Rav Huna Bar Avin, I'm sorry, send something to the Beis Medrash and then send that everybody disagrees with him? It doesn't make sense. So the Rabbeinu Tam eliminates the girsa of Baram and he changes the word kocha to kocho. So this is the way he reads it. He reads, he says, Shalach Rav Huna Bar Avin amochas adedli shto kanta ubalo chol perot, the same statement. Now, a proof to that? That's what Rav Huna Bar Avin is sending a proof. Rabbi Ava Rabbi Vo b'chol g'deli ador amru b'matana b'kesh litno la v'lama gantala b'shum mecha g'dei le'yafot kocho. He really wanted to gift it to his wife, so why does he write it as a transaction?
Yeah,
a payrot, exactly. He wanted to establish a payrot, and therefore that's a proof to my position. So that's what he changed. He changes the gear so to eliminate the Brahm and to make it kocho. Alright, so that's how the right, because the other says, I don't understand why Rav Huna is sending he's sending a position to the base measure, and he's sending that everybody else disagrees with him. It doesn't make sense. The Reed disagrees. He thinks that the changing the girsa of the Rabbeinu Tam's girsa doesn't make so much sense. And he says that the girsa of the Sfarim is Biram, right? That it's Biram Rabbi Abba and the Yofot Kocha, and they disagree with him. Right, that they pligale, they disagree, like the Rashbam says. Sari de mochel ishto lo kanta de gluya zuzehu de bay. Sari Rav Huna. Right, so that is the difference between them. The Rashbam says that over here that they disagree with him that he's ochel perot. Right, that it's not going to mean like a man matana kanta ve'en abal ochel perot. Umiyo be mochel ochel en lo markein she'en ovo kol kach. This is unique to a wife. And when he sells it to a wife, we say that what? That he sells it, he really wants to give it as a gift. The reason he makes it as a mecher is only to what? To give her strength or koach. And then, but he can't, right, eat perot because he gave it as a matana. That's it. That's what the Rashbam says, the statement of it. The reason is no, that this machlokas goes back to the machlokas we had before. Can a wife buy property from her husband? That's the answer. So what is it? The first opinion, Rav Huna Bar Avin says, yes, you can buy a wife, a wife can buy property from her husband, and therefore he bought the property, and now he's ochel perot. The statement of Rabbi Avin, Rabbi Avo is, no, you cannot buy property from your wife. A wife can't buy property from her husband. So what's going on over here? It must have been a matana. Why do we have a contract that says mecher? That is liyafeh, right, kocha. That's in order to give her a strength. So what is he saying over here? That the whole issue is that since you cannot sell it, it must be a matana. It must be a matana. Why do we have a shtar mecher? We have a shtar mecher over here, then go over to, right, the yafot kocha. So that's it. So the argument, according to the Ri, is about whether you can't buy property from her husband. Rav Huna says a wife can buy property. And Rabbi Avvel and Rabbi Avo say no, that she cannot buy property. And that's why the outcome of the case. The Rashbam seems to say no, that a husband could sell property to his wife. The issue here is, how does a husband view his wife? I mean, that according to Rav Huna, when he sells it, that's exactly what he did. He sold it to her. Right? The Rabbi Avvel and Rabbi Avo say no. That when he sells it to her, he's not really selling to her, he's giving it as a matana. And why did he write it as a shtar mecher? It's because of the answer that Ravashi gave before, has been to establish kocha. And so the Rashbam never mentions, right, that the fact that it doesn't work, that the fact that that's what's generating the matan over here. He says no, that the whole issue here is because he loves his wife. If he loves his wife, he's going to give it as a matan and not as a mecher. That's the way the Rashbam said. The Rashbam could be read like the Reed, but that's not what he doesn't say it explicitly. Now the Gemara says, Meitavei, lo v'mina evid v'shichvaro mina isha v'girsha, ein lahem alav klum. They have no rights here. My tama la mishum damre gulei zuzehu. Right? Isn't it because, right, you can't, basically a wife cannot buy property from her husband because you can always have the excuse that I was trying to get find out about this money. So the Gemara says, yes, on Rav Huna Bar Avin's position, the Gemara says, Shani Hotam, right? The same answer that we gave before, which is that when it comes to Eved and Isha over here, the case is unique because he's borrowing. When it comes to borrowing money, then we're going to say, yes, Legule Zuze, that he has an excuse why he wanted to borrow, because nobody would willingly make themselves into a borrower of money. So if that's the case, we say that he's trying to, well, we'll give him the excuse that he was trying to find his own money. But when a case of Mecher, there's no such stamp, there's no such mitigating factor. There's no mitigating factor, then you can say that the sale went through. Amarav. So Rav says a person who sells a field to his wife. So number one, we see that he can sell a field to his wife. Number two is the Baal, it's like Nichsei Malug, and the Baal can eat Peirot. Bimatana, if he gives it as a gift, Kanta Vena Baal Ochel Peirot. This is like what the Rav was saying, that right, that over here is konen when it's a matana, and the Baal does not eat peirot. He's not entitled to eat peirot. Rabbi Lazar Amar, echadzeh kanta, v'en Baal ochel peirot. Both of these cases, he's konen, and the Baal is not ochel peirot. What's the position of Rabbi Lazar? The position of Rabbi Lazar is like, right, Rabbi Huna that we saw earlier, and Rabbi Nachman, which is, that when you give it as a matana, right, it is a mecher, but what? Like Rav Ashi said, that he wrote it as a shtar mecher in order to, when you give it as a mech, when you do the sale, it's really a matana, but he wrote a mecher in order to protect her. So, Avad Rav Chista Uvduk Rabbi Lazar. Because he went ahead and paskin like Rabbi Lazar, he did something. A husband who sold property to his wife, he didn't let the husband go get payroll from the property. So either it's Rabbanu Ukva, Rabbanu Nechemya, or that's the gears of the, that's Bnei Benate, the grandchildren, the Rav Chista, which would make sense since Rav Chista is the one who's doing it. They're the grandchildren of Chista. He was their maternal grandfather. Right? They said to Rav Chista, Shavak Mar Ravarve Vaved Kazutre? You left the big guns or the earlier Misora and went with the younger ones? Why? Because you have two people who are establishing a halacha over here. You have Rav Lazar, right, who's saying something, and then you have Rav who says something. Right? And Rav was before, who is Rabbi Lazar's Rebbe? Rabbi Lazar's Rebbe is Rabbi Yochanan. And so now you're going with Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Lazar, over Rav. Rav is even before the Rebbe of Rabbi Lazar. So if I'm focused between Rav and Rabbi Lazar, why are you going with Rabbi Lazar? Go with Rav. He's the, right, he's the big gun. He's the Rabbeinu Shebabavel. Why wouldn't you go, why would you go after a Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan instead of with Rav? Yeah, listen, but here we don't have Rabbi Yochanan. Here they're just saying that it's Rav and Rabbi Lazar. Right? In a second they're going to say exactly what you're saying. I also did like a big gun. Why? Tichiyat Rav and Amar Rabbi Yochanan. So now he has the din from Rabbi Yochanan, not from Lazar, but from Yochanan himself. So there he goes. He has Rabbi Lazar, yes, learned it from his Rabbi Yochanan. Now we have it explicitly from Rabbi Yochanan. Once we have it from explicitly from Rabbi Yochanan, he says, listen, that I am willing over here to establish my position, like, because Rabbi Yochanan, who was a Chavero Shel Rav, even though he was, you know, after Rav a little bit, he was a Talmud of Rav, or he was a little bit after Rav, nevertheless, he was classified as a Chavero, they're established as peers. So since they're peers, right, Rabbi Yochanan, then once I have this member from Rabbi Yochanan, then I went with Rabbi Yochanan. So I'm a Rav, so Rav says, what's the halacha? Rav is a bacher, and now says, Hilchoso, Hamocher Sadeli Shto, Lo Kanta. You can't sell property to your wife. That sounds like, right, the Shmuel before, right, or the Rabbi Ava and Rabbi Yavohu that say that you can't sell property to a wife, it doesn't work. But Baal Ochel Peirot. Oh, wait a minute. And then the husband eats Peirot. Wait a minute, if the sale doesn't go through, why is the Baal eating Peirot? Those are Estira Minei Oveit. Right? You can only say that the Baal eats Peirot if he actually sold it to his wife. Right? If he didn't sell it to his wife, then what are you talking about? He owns the property. What do you mean, Ochel Peirot? And if the sale goes through, then you can say Ochel Peirot, but he just said the sale didn't go through. So that's Kumar's going to ask the first question. He's going to ask, Bimatana, Kanta Vena Baal Ochel Peirot. And if it's a Matana, then there's a Kinyan, and the Baal doesn't have Peirot. That is like Rav. He's passing a Ochel like Rav. So Kumar says, Tarte. What about the Reish? The Reish is a Stir Mene Ovei. It says, Lokasha, Kambamot Tumunim, Kambamot Chain Tumunim. Depends, right, on the husband's position. Are there money that is hidden away or money that's not hidden away? Meaning, if the money that's being used to purchase this property is money that the husband knew about, was open and available money, then we say that the sale goes through. Why? Because what's the only claim that we said that the sale doesn't go through is because the husband can make a claim with Gluye Zuze. I was trying to establish about these hidden bank accounts that she has. But if the money she's using to pay for it is not from a hidden bank account, he doesn't have that claim. Whereas, if the money is tumunim, if the money is hidden away, and she brings out all of a sudden this hidden stash of cash, she brings out to pay for the property, then we can make a claim that it's lo kanta. Why? Because he got exactly what he wanted. He found out about this stash of cash that she didn't show up with beforehand. And therefore, in that case, it would be lo kanta. Tamar Yehuda, mo tumunim, lo kanta. Mo chenum tumunim, kanta. Rav Yehuda, right, too, is both the Talmud of Rav and Talmud of Shmuel, says, Rav Hunda says, and probably from Rav also, that there's a difference between stashed away cash and cash that's available. If you got cash stashed away in a hidden place, that does not allow you to buy the property. The woman cannot buy the property from the husband because the husband has the right to say, L'guya zuze, I was trying to find this hidden stash of cash. On the other hand, if this cash is available, ready and available, and the husband knows better and she purchases it with that cash, that's a good transaction because he doesn't have the claim of L'guya zuze. So in conclusion, right, the halacha goes like Rav, versus Rabbi Lazar. One, first of all, which is the difference between mecher and matana. If you sell a property to your wife, you're entitled to payroll. It's like nisle malug. If you gift the property to your wife, then you have no rights whatsoever because a gift is given by ayin yofe. Ayin yofe means you give everything. Not only do you give her the rights or the gufa karka, you give her the payroll as well. Now, within mecher, even Rab agrees that there's this you can distinguish. And that is like the spin of Shmuel. Shmuel says that a sale does not go through, right? A mecher does not go through without cash. You can't have a shtar establish a contract. That's the case. In this case, if he says l'gluye zuze, right, then the mecher doesn't go through. Rav says, what is that case when we can say the husband has a right to say l'gluye zuze? That's in a case where the motz munim. If she brings out cash they did not know about before, then I agree with Shmuel, then it's l'gluye zuze. If it's l'gluye zuze, we don't have a transaction because the shtar itself will not establish the transaction. The other exception we have is the case of loveh. Where else do we say l'gluye zuze is where he borrows money. If he borrows money from his eved or from his wife, again over there, to establish that the money is there, because he would never want to make himself into a loveh, because that is a term or a situation that nobody would place themselves into. Okay, we'll stop over there.